Thank you, Don. My name's Les. I'm an alcoholic. Good evening, group, because Alcoholics Anonymous works when I work at Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink today, and that's been going on for 24 days, 10 months, and 25 years. And I'm very grateful for that. I'm very grateful that it's my honor and my privilege to be here, Don. I can tell you that for sure. Tony, glad you're here. I know how you feel. You don't know how I feel. But if you'll hang around a while and get with some of these old boys here and do what they tell you to do, come to a lot of meetings, you'll have one of the greatest lives you've ever seen. Because the greatest promise we've got in our book for me is, it said, that the best years of our life, of best years of our existence lies ahead. And those 25 years and odd months and odd days I just told you about, it has made my life turn my life totally around with just a little effort on my part. And it does take a little effort on the alcoholic's part. It won't come by osmosis. There's no such thing as that. And won't rub off on you. You've got to become involved in what Don read up here and what Tim read up here. We talked last week about the first three steps. And the first three steps is the HOW of Alcoholics Anonymous. The honesty is the H. That the alcoholic, to have any success at all, must be honest with himself. It's not necessarily mean he's got to be honest to everybody else, but he will become that way as he stays here a while. But it's first and foremost that we accept that we are powerless over alcohol. We admit that we were powerless. Admit means to tell the truth. We admit that we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. That's the reason we're all here, is because we're powerless over alcohol, and none of our lives was manageable when we got here. I would have bet you money that mine was, but then when I got a glance of it sober, it didn't look so manageable to me. But this is the beginning of a lifestyle makeover. This is where the alcoholic comes in here, and he or she must change. Because if drinking was my problem, quitting drinking would be my answer. And every time I quit drinking before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was worse than I was when I was drinking. Because I needed alcohol and I needed it bad. And you're talking about going to any lengths, I would go to any lengths it took to get the next drink. And for the last 5 years, I stayed drunk nearly the whole time. And and was pronounced dead twice in 77. And the doctor told me, if you ever drink again, it'll kill you. And I went right out of the hospital 2 days later and drank the minute I could get to the first liquor store. And the second step will kind of tell you that. It's the open-mindedness, H-O-W. The open-mindedness of Alcoholics Anonymous is the second step. It says that we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. It's not talking about the insane things we do out on the street to a degree. But the sanity that we're talking about here is the sanity that we know we can't take that first drink. Because I am totally insane if I think I can take a drink today, even if it's in pea soup or buttermilk, because I thought that was the most horrendous thing I'd ever heard of, was the first drink's what got me drunk. Well, 25 years and 10 months and 24 days later, I hadn't had that first one, so I hadn't had to have that second one, third one, fourth one, or tenth one. And it's just a matter of fact that if I don't take the first one, I've got a chance today. And if I take one, all my chances are gone. And if you be alcoholic like I be alcoholic, yours is too. I would like to speak to you about your age. You're young, yes, but I am too. I'm really young. But when I got here, I was young, is what I'm saying. But my wife sobered up in New York City when she was 21, 25. And there weren't many women in there here then. But I've got some friends throughout the country where I've spoken at that's got 13 and 14 years, and they're 21 years old, 19 years old, and they've done got 13 to 14 years under their belt. So an alcoholic is an alcoholic is an alcoholic. It doesn't make any difference, a man, woman, boy, or girl, black, green, blue, yellow, white, whatever. It doesn't matter if you're an alcoholic. You're an alcoholic. The age has nothing to do with it. You just saved a lot of trouble. That you probably had plenty, but you saved a lot more by getting here now. But we must become honest with ourselves that there is a power greater than ourselves. And it didn't say we come to. You don't have to do that tonight. It would be fine if you could. Maybe you can't. I couldn't because I did have no problem. I didn't want God in my life. I wasn't going to have God in my life, and because I didn't. That wasn't what I came here for. And so I didn't get excited about it until I told them one day in group that I didn't believe in God and I wasn't going to do what they said. Because they had been saying, with your help today, Lord, I won't take a drink. Every morning they said, they got up and asked and said that little prayer, God, with your help, I won't take a drink of anything containing alcohol today. And I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it because I was very obstinate. I was stubborn. I was redundant too. I was everything just over and over. But the fact is that for the longest I didn't. I did what the people said in here, but I didn't do that. But it said we came to believe, not that we came to believe in a power. It says we came to believe that a power, not in a power, because I sure couldn't have done that. But it says could restore us to sanity. Well, the sanity of that insanity of that first drink can come if you've got the time I've got, the time. Don, yeah, that's it. See? Yeah, he can't. His wife got onto him a while ago, and I saw it, and I'm going to never forget it. I mean, I ain't letting that go no more. But she got on me, too. I was part of it. But the fact is that insanity of that first drink lurches around every corner because it was red there a while ago. Alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful, and it's also very patient. It just sits out there and waiting on every one of us to come by and get us something to drink tonight. And so we have to be ever vigilant about this, ever vigilant about the sobriety that you get and the sobriety that you can keep. And you'll see your life change totally, totally, totally. Because the W of this program is the willingness. Because the first two steps are reflection, and the third step is fixing to get ready to arm you with some things that you're going to need to finish the rest of the 12 steps. I found my God way on down in the steps. Way down. I was already way down in the steps before I said those words. And I remember the day it was. I remember the place in the highway it was. And the day that I did it, it was a marvelous thing. It was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me then. And I will still say, as many blessings as have been given me since I've been sober, that was the biggest one. Because without that, I wouldn't have had much. Because this is spiritual. This is not religion. We don't talk religion in here. We don't talk politics. It was read up here a while ago. We don't do a lot of those things. We talk about getting sober and staying sober. Our one purpose is to get sober and stay sober. And there's not a soul in here that has ever heard anybody that went out and drank some more and come back in and said, boy, you ought to go try it. It sure does get better. Well, I can tell you, if it got better, we'd all be out there doing it now. And the book says that it's not going to get any better. There is no better for it to get because this is the better. But we have to become willing. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to God as we understood it. We made that decision. Just as I said last week, I made a decision in Kaufman, Texas this afternoon to get up and shower and put on a few clothes and come to Tyler. If that's all I'd have done, I'd been still sitting in Kaufman. I had to be willing to come and I had to put forth some action in it. And this is where a lot of drunks get drunk. Because they come to this, they get to step three, they look at it, and they say, yeah, God's going to do it. I'll just let him. And so I'll go home. I won't make no more meetings. And I won't talk to my sponsor. And all of a sudden you hear people getting drunk because they're afraid of what they see next. And when you go to looking at this program and you go to talking about inventories, people turn their head and run. And yet this is the first place, this fourth step, this is the first place that the alcoholic has made any semblance of showing he wants to recover it because it isn't. He will be doing something to get it. The third step, we start taking our own actions. We start taking ownership of the things we do and the things we've done. And we make that decision. And we take a good while to do it because if we really want to do it, then what we're going to do is we're going to practice the rest of the 12 steps as fervently as we can. Because these 12 steps are a daily thing. They're not something we do one time and say, whew, we're through with that, now what do we do? There's some people that do that and they get drunk too. As I said last week, if you were sick and you went to the doctor today and he said, well, you've got a kidney infection, Les. I said, well, okay, what are we going to do? He said, well, take this medicine and you'll get better. I wouldn't set the medicine up on a refrigerator and let it sit there waiting to get better. I'd start taking the medicine. This is the medicine for the disease, alcoholism, because the isms is what we start treating with step four. by the time we've been here and got a sponsor and started talking to the sponsor about things, and we're getting to step three, and you're putting it in your life, and you're trying to do the best you can do, you come to the realization that drinking wasn't my problem. My isms was my character defects were not caused by alcohol. It's just the reverse. Alcohol didn't cause me to do the things I'd done. I would have done them after I didn't, when I didn't drink. And I certainly didn't have, I don't have any people that's not on that block in here either, because I didn't know, my defects of characters were showing up real big when I got here. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. But the four steps said we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And that's not talking about our neighbor or somebody else we had. It's, we've got to sit down and get a good look at this. Step four, and we got to have a pen and a pencil and a piece of paper. If you can't read and write, then you can. You're certainly welcome to use a tape machine. But if you can read and write, follow the directions. Pick up the pen and start writing about you. There's a lot of people in this room know the man I went to take my first four step with. And I went and woke him up early one morning. He lived over in Athens. He stayed up all night. I didn't know he stayed up all night. But he very near did. And I got there about 4 hours after he had been to bed at about 8:30. And he got up and let me in the door and made me some coffee. And he went over and sat down in his chair, in his easy chair, and went to sleep. And told me, he said, start writing about the people that you resent. Put down the people that you resent. And I started writing that down. I got three or four. I thought that should be enough. And then I thought of somebody else. And it went on and went on. And then all of a sudden, it got real quiet. I was reliving some things I didn't want to look at. That passed back there. And you cannot plan a future if you don't do something to take care of the past. It's just that simple. You cannot, the future is, can't be here. If you remember, Bill Wilson said in that big book there, when Abby come to talk to him before he got sober, and he said, we can talk about good old times. Later, I heard a tape of Bill say that, yes, he did say that, we'd talk about old times, because today was totally hopeless because he is already drunk and there is no future because I can't see it. And he, with the way he was going, he knew it was fixed to be the end of it. And so, today we can talk about the future, but we must have cleaned up that past and getting there. We're not as bad as we think we are. And this inventory. If there's anybody in here that's struggling with it, there's probably two or three things you're doing wrong, and one is you're not talking to your sponsor enough. And if you love your sponsor and you ain't done a four-step, you ain't near talked to him enough, I'll tell you. Because, we're not very sympathetic in here. We love you, but tough love abides if a man's going to stay sober. Because I had to have it. Or I never would have made it. But I put that, I wrote that inventory out, and it's back there in the back of it's out in the back of my car right now, sitting right out there. And it's the poorest inventory that I've ever seen in my life. There is no way it could be any worse, because it was just, it didn't. But one thing I had was I had an objective that day, and that is I wasn't going to get drunk, and I didn't want to, so I'm going to do what the book says. So I let that old man, I quit. When he woke up and he looked, and I was just sitting there sipping coffee, and the pen was laying over. He said, "You get tired of looking at yourself?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, write down one more thing, the worst thing you've ever done." I said, "I'm not going to put it on paper." He said, "Yeah, if you're going to stay sober, you're going to put it on paper." So I kind of, scribbled something. And he said, "While you're doing it, get up and get you a cup of coffee and get a good breath of air and kind of quit. And reach over here and start naming all of your assets." And I said, "I don't have any assets. I don't have farms and cars and money. I just got me." He said, "That's not the assets we're talking about. We're talking about the things that we take for granted that God has given us." He said, "Let me give you three hints of things that I know you've got that you don't know you've got." I said, "Let me hear it." He said, "You're sober. You've got AA, and you're going to find a God." He said, "God, AA, and sober are, in any order, are the three biggest profits that I've got here. They're the greatest assets that I could possibly have." And little did I know that the way I did that inventory was okay. There is no such a thing as one's perfect. I see people write books that thick and hadn't even been out of their hometown yet, you know. We got to write down our fears. We're not going to, the fears, you're going to have to talk to your sponsor about them, and they can be rid of or lessened a bunch. But what we do here, we need to change ourselves to meet the outside. You see, I spent 41 years. I come to AA the day I was 41, hadn't had a drink 27 days. But I came here I wasn't willing to do anything. I wanted y'all to hand it to me. And the fact was that I fell in love with you the first night I was here and did everything but that tell God, you know, that I asked God to help me stay sober. But we needed a change. I had been trying to change it forever. I spent 41 full years from my first remembrance, which probably when I was 5 years old, of trying to change everybody to suit me. It drastically got better when I quit trying to change y'all and them and they and started trying to change me. When I started to look inside of me and see what it was that caused my alcoholism. Because by this time, you're two or three months sober, and you're looking around and you're thinking, this is not so bad after all. I can get by. Just turn it over to God. Well, if you turn it over to God, it'd be like planting watermelons, you know. And you go plant watermelons, and in the middle of the night you wake up and you go to thinking, reckon they're growing, and you go out there and dig up them seeds to see if it's doing anything. You do that 5 or 6 times a day. Well, turning it over to God, you leave them seeds there. You don't think about it is the best I know to tell you. But we're looking at seven. You see, alcoholics, there was a great big inventory made of us when we had 100 people. And they said that they got hired many psychiatrists to talk to those people and get honest with them. It took them a long time to do it. And they said that we are childish, sensitive, and grandiose. That's three things that the alcoholic possesses. And you see, every time I would talk to Jack, I'd say, why do you treat me like I'm 16? He said, because you act like it. I said, well, I'm 41. He said, you don't act near that. You act more like you're 15. I didn't know it, but medical science has proven that the day you take your first drink, your emotions quit growing till you stop drinking. If you are going to be an alcoholic, if you come into this thing, and a lot of people come in and find they're not alcoholic, but just a severe bad drinker. And if they keep on doing that, they will be back in here, you know. That's why we've got doors open and everything else. Because a lot of people come in here and don't like us very much. But they like us a whole bunch more than they like that alcohol, I'll tell you that. Because it's our best PR guy we got. It's out there working right now, bringing people in here. That's why we need to be ready. But alcoholics are childish. We're sensitive. Oh, don't say nothing about what I said tonight. Especially when I got here. Man, I was horribly sensitive. So is everybody else. It was just horrible things people would do to us. And we would carry it for days, you know. But the one thing I don't know anything about is this other one. This grandiosity. I have no idea what that means, except for I've got a bunch of it. That's why, but I know this. Grandiosity is telling them you got a ticket for 90 and you didn't do it but for 65. You got to have it bigger and better than everybody else. There's three areas in our life that must be catch attention, and that's sex, power, and money. Because the alcoholic can never get enough sex, enough power, and enough money. And you give an alcoholic a little money and a little sex, they've got all the power there is in the world. It's self-generated, just like that. But the grandiosity thing that I'm talking about, Bill addressed this in the 12 and 12. And he said in the fourth step, he said, to avoid falling into confusion. Well, man, I'm going to tell you something. There's nobody in no bigger confusion than the alcoholic when he or she gets here. Said, but to avoid following in further confusion, let's take a list of the seven deadly sins. And there your defects of character are, causes you and me to do everything we do. Those seven deadly sins. We'll talk about them in a minute. The reason he did that is because if you've been in AA as long as I have, and some a bunch of the other people out here that's been here longer than I have, if you have a four-step meeting and you've got 20 people there, the first one's probably going to have around 74 defects. And the next one will have about 82. And it'll get around, and this last one will have 176, if that's what it takes to be bigger than the rest of them. Because, you know, I've worked up enough here over the last few years to be a speaker on Sunday morning, and I love it. I listen to all them other speakers and let them get drunk when they want to. I can bump it a year if I have to. Sometimes I have to get drunk in the womb nearly, because some of them take a drink when they're 5 years old or something. That's grandiosity, and we're not going to lose all of it right away, and I hope we don't, because the enthusiasm that comes with this program and laughing, the laughter that we have. We didn't laugh much. I didn't laugh much the last five or six years of my drinking, and it was really an existence. That's all it was. And when I got to y'all and saw that y'all were laughing, and I didn't see anything funny, but I knew that there was something that I needed to do, and I didn't know what it was. And when I saw those seven deadly sins, and the first one says pride. The first one is pride. Pride and ego are interchangeable, because we're very egotistical people. Like I told you last week, when I bat my eye, I think it's dark on everybody. And our song is "I Was Always on My Mind." Willie didn't know what he was talking about. No, you weren't always on my mind. I mean, self-centered to the extreme, I believe, is the way we'd have to look at this, because that's what the average alcoholic is, and that's okay as long as it don't hurt anybody else. But once we start hurting somebody else, and we need to look at where we did hurt other people. We needed to look at why we were so irresponsible. Pardon me, I've been sick all day with some kind of a virus, and it's not spreadable, I don't think. I thought I'd let y'all sit here, see how many of you come back next week and jumped on me, but it hadn't been all that bad. I mean, I've complained a lot because I got a lot of sympathy. That'll do it every time, because we don't suffer well. I never have seen us. We just don't suffer good, that's all. But pride heads it up, and ego is interchangeable. I work crossword puzzles every day, and I know, and for you that do, you know that's interchangeable. So our ego has caused us to do a great deal, many of things. And in your own preparation, and in this 12, and in this big book here on page 65, he gives that illustration there of who he resented, why it affected him, and what were the causes and how it affected him. That's what we're looking at here. We're looking at what it doesn't make any difference about anything except the fact that we were maladjusted to life and about everything we knew. And you can be resentful. You can be resentful at a car dealer. You can be resentful at the telephone company, and it'll make you drunk. Resentment is our number one offender. You cannot carry around a load. And you can't. You must talk about it, because God won't heal what you don't reveal. Just that simple. However quaint that may be, that's just the way it is. Because once we get that, and the ego will play a great deal in my everyday inventory. Still does to this day, because I've still got an ego. I just don't want it to hurt nobody. And that's my prayer every morning. A part of my prayer. We'll talk about that as we go later. But the next one's greed. There has never been a group of people more greedy than we are, because we ain't ever had enough of nothing yet. And that says that in the 12 and 12, that we far exceeded our own limitations in everything we did. We couldn't stop it. We went way further in on everything. Sex, power, and money. That's just that simple. We were greedy about it. We didn't care. And then here comes lust right behind it. Lust is a form of that has caused me a lot of problems in my life. As you all know that know me any at all, I've been to wedding ceremonies here lately in a Catholic church that lasted longer than one of my marriages did. And it's nearly true. I mean, I had a 28-day marriage one time, and I thought that's how long I was going to stay at that church while I was there, but it didn't. And that's not a down in the Catholic. It's just a matter of fact that I spoke at Saturday night at a place, and it was next door to a church, and they were having a big wedding over there. And I told them, I'm a little excited here. I don't feel good being around that. Because I thought wedding cake was one of the four main food groups when I got here. And lust caused every bit of it. Lust brought every bit of that on. Anger. There's not an alcoholic in this room that's ever dealt with anger. I mean, that until you got here, and you still do, because the way we don't get mad, because you get red hot, zip. Right, snap of a button. I mean, my anger button. I don't get mad. I don't want to say this, but I'm going to say it again. I don't get mad very much. I don't have really any cause to. But when I do, I'm at the top of the chart. I mean, Fahrenheit thermometer just blow the top out of it because I really want to be mad when I'm mad. And we'll talk about that when we get to 10th step. But this is one of the angers, one of the things that causes our resentments. Is we get angry because they got it and we ain't. And then the next one is envy, and that goes the same way. Envy has given me a lot of problems in my life. I was envious of a lot of things that a lot of people had that I didn't have. But that lot of people didn't spend all their time getting married and getting divorced staying in a bar most of the time. They were out working and doing their deal, and I was doing my deal, but it wasn't very productive. Envy is something that is a hard thing to control. Even today, I have a lot of trouble with it at times. The next two are sloth and gluttony. We all know what they are. But you cannot think your way into good acting. You have to act your way into good thinking. You cannot. You can think about it on any size deal you've got. And it can be the size of a grain of sand in your hand at 9 o'clock in the morning. And you can look at it, and you can look at it, and you can dwell on it, and you can dwell on it. All of a sudden, it just fills up the whole room. And by night, you're so sick, you can't even go to a meeting and tell them how bad it is because you're just immobile. And that's why we need to check ourselves on everything we do, because anger is a pretty tough thing, and envy is too. But this is where we start getting a little bit level of playing field. Up until then, my whole life was going up that way, and with nowhere to stop, it didn't seem like. And today, the field's pretty level, because I know where the ball's at now. I never did know who had the ball till y'all handed it to me and said, "You got the ball. It's in your court. You can get out of this." And I will guarantee you, Tony, and I guarantee everybody in this room that's an alcoholic, if you put these 12 steps in your life to the best of your ability, don't have to be perfect today, you're going to be perfect. You can do anything you want to do, go anywhere you want to go, and be anything you want to be. And if you drink, you can't have any of the above. It just won't be there for you. I am living the dream, really and truly. This is what I want to do, right here. And I get to do a lot of it. I'm happy most of the time. I don't have much problems that God and prayer in this program can take care of. We start looking at these as serious emotional problems, and they are. We have a disease of the emotions here, and we need to write these down. And when we get through with, "I am resentful at the phone company," why? What caused me to be that way? They shut off my telephone. Well, over here, how did that affect you? Well, it made me mad. And on and on and on. And ego was a little bit into it too, because you didn't want to tell nobody. So ego's kind of striking at every move we make, or it does with me. And we start doing that. And this is until you do that. And you, like I say, you can't be perfect. You can't. It ain't gonna be a bad one. But I don't have any bad one. I didn't drink that day. I've since too. I take an inventory every March and every October on the past 6 months, because if you don't grow, you're gonna go. It's just that simple. You've got to keep moving forward. You can't stand still. And I take these inventories, not on back yonder. I've sealed that up years ago, because that's what we're fixing to do. We made a decision up there to turn our will and life over to care of God. And this is just one little small part of that to get you ready for the rest of the 12 steps. And as you find out what all your defects of characters are, and you want to find a way to get it a little easier, and make it easier, get you 12 and 12 out. It's got 28 questions in step 4. And if you, and 11 of them's on sex, and 11 of them's on power, and 6 of them's on money. And if you can write them down out of that 12 or 12, they're not numerical. They're not numbered. The first one starts out when and how and in what instance. You take that 12 and 12 and you look at it in the 4th step, read that 4th step. When it gets to that, put a 1 and write out that question. And then he's going to ask you another one. He's going to ask you 11 questions. Leave plenty of room between them, because you're going to have to be writing a lot, because it's going to hit home in a very, like a velvet hammer. It'll be everything that you'll read. Every one of them will say, "Yes, I'm guilty of that." Some of them you may not be, but most of them you will be. Therefore, then you can come back and do your fear list, and then you can come back and do your resentment list. It's just according to what you want to do. But we're looking for happiness here. And once we start finding out what we've done, then we move right on to step five, which it said we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. This is the step that separates, it just makes you what you're going to be. Because all this program's about, in my opinion, and I want that to be very known, that in my opinion, we're about three things, four things. We're about get right with myself, get right with God, get right with you, and stay that way. Those are the four things I think that we cover in these 12 steps. But here we know ourselves. We've written it down. And we're going to have to talk to God about it. We're going to have to go tell somebody else face to face. Well, I didn't want to do that. Because I didn't want to tell nobody. I had one thing I wasn't going to tell. Like I told you a while ago, that old man wanted me to write it down. I didn't, you know. But it was going to haunt me for a long time. But I did what nobody should ever do. We took that inventory on a Thursday morning. And I just folded it up, put it in my car, and drove off. Didn't talk to him about nothing. Went on to work. And the next Monday, I went to Dallas. Went to a wino's house. And I banged on the door. And I knew where he was at because I knew he was drunk. Banged on his door because I'd lived with him some when I was drinking. Banged on his door and he come to the door. I mean, he was horrible looking. He looked awful. He died that way, by the way. But I said, Riley, would you like to have a fifth of Mogan David 2020? And he said, boy, would I. I said, well, will you listen to me talk for about an hour? He said, yeah. I mean, he wasn't selling out too cheap. I mean, what can I say? I mean, this dude needed, you know, that's too long a story, but you know. I mean, you know, and when I said, yeah, if I just talked to half a day, it'd be fine. So by the time we went across to Dallas, got his fifth of Mogan David 2020, Mad Dog to those who know, we got back and I read my inventory. And when I laughed, Riley laughed. When I cried, Riley cried. And Raleigh got drunk and I stayed sober. But I didn't get anything out of it because Raleigh didn't tell me anything where I was going wrong. And the next 6 months was perilously hard for me because I didn't tell him what I never was going to tell nobody. And I got with a guy that I know that some of you know him in here. Paul does, I know. And I know you do, and knew him. He was an undertaker, mortician, and he was a full blood Indian, blonde headed, with no hair, just a little right here, and he had 10 years sober. After about 6 months, I done another inventory and I looked, and this time it was something considering this, and I knew I needed to talk to somebody about it, and I had asked Tom if he would help me, and he said yes. Tom lived in Wills Point. I lived down on Cedar Creek Lake at that time. And I said, well, it's going to take a good while. He said, okay, if it takes the rest of our lives, let's do it. He said, you've been needing to do it a long time. Well, see, I took another member of Alcoholics Anonymous and asked him to do it because he knew how I felt. This is not in disagreement with this big book because it says we can pick our minister, we can pick our doctor. But personally, I picked an sober alcoholic this time. Because they didn't mention the word sponsor in this book at all in the first 164 pages. And in the 12, by then, they already had 42,000 people and everybody was sponsoring everybody. But it had to be each one sponsoring somebody else. But I got over there and I didn't have this written down, that one thing that was going to kill me. And you see, all of you sitting here right now has got something that you don't want nobody to know, that you're going to carry to your grave. The 12 and 12 and the big book talks about they did start back to drinking because they didn't clean up their house. And this we've got to get of all, and he italicized that. And when I was in school, they taught me that was very important. All these defects of characters must be tended to. All the things we did must be told to somebody else so we can clear away and we don't have to live with that past haunting us. Well, I had already heard of this one guy in this area that had 38 years, 8 months, and 6 days that he went out and got drunk. And I went and talked to that old man, and I said, what is it that you bring your drunkenness to after all those years? He said, well, I quit going to AA one because I got so smart y'all couldn't teach me anything. He said, but to tell you the truth, I never cleaned house. He said, I had a couple of things that just nearly was killing me. He told me that after I had talked to Tom. But me and Tom was just sitting there. I got there about 1 o'clock. We got coffee, and his wife was way back on the other side of the house, and we were just talking about me, you know. And I was reading things to him and all the things I'd done, all the marriages I'd had and everything. And Tom would just say, yeah, that's your ego, Les. Yeah, Les, that may be this. Maybe that he would give me what I was looking for, what defect of character I needed to be thinking about so I could go to God with him in the later steps. And I didn't have this thing written down, but we talked and we talked. And it just blurted out my mouth. And I thought as it was leaving my lips, uh-oh, another enemy. He'll never speak to you again as long as you live. He didn't even bat an eye. You see, we are so egotistical that we think we've invented all this stuff. And everything we've ever done collectively in here has been on the big screen, at least on HBO. And all my children and whatever. But that's neither here nor there. We won't get embroiled in that. I see some women looking at me crying. Until we do this, 4-step, when we write it down, when we do this, this will be the first tangible evidence we've showed that we really want to get sober. Because at the alcoholic's house, after all said and done, there's one hell of a lot more said than there is done. And this is the start of what we do. And when we get to step 5 and we find whoever, I do it with my sponsor. And sometimes I do it with somebody that's going to do a 5th step with me and that I sponsor. But I don't go back over all that because here I'm fixing to get rid of that right here. I'm going to admit this to God. God will take it away because it may take a while. You may have to do it a good while, but you've got time. It's okay. Just as long as you don't drink, you've got plenty of time. But until we actually sit down and talk, our willingness is largely theoretical, and we must become ready to take it. When I told Tom that, he didn't bat an eye. He didn't say nothing. He said, well, now, I didn't do that, but I did this, this, and this. And before I left, I told him, I said, Tom, that deal I was talking to you about a while ago, you didn't see me read it, did you? He said, no, I said, it's because I wasn't going to tell anybody. And he said, well, you know, I kind of felt like you didn't. It wasn't on that paper. He said, every one of us has come with that same problem of not wanting to get into our back life where somebody else will know about it. But this is where the rubber really does meet the road right here. Because we talk to God about it. We admit, which means honesty. We admit to God and ourselves and to another human being, this is really me on this sheet of paper here. And now I got to talk to God about it, and I got to talk to the old Tom about it. Now I'll have to talk. I talk to Jim about it now in Fort Worth. That's my sponsor. But I was a pallbearer at Tom's funeral. But all the people, all alcoholics, will relapse periodically until they clean house and do a good job of it and keep it clean. Keep it clean. And once I do, the 10th step will take care of that when we get down to it. But right now we're only talking about step 5. Step 5 is a place where we start feeling that we're not isolated anymore. I started feeling like I belonged somewhere, that I was part of something. And it was, as far as I could tell, it was as good as anything I'd ever had. And it turned out to be just that way. And that loneliness that I had started to disappear. And this is the disease of the loneliness right here. This disease carries more loneliness with because the last 5 years I didn't want to talk to you and I didn't want you talking to me. And because one thing, you might want to drink my whiskey. And the other thing is, you might want me to go do something about it. And so I just cut out the middleman altogether. And it just became me and me and me. And, you know, our mind's like a bad neighborhood. You don't want to go in it by yourself. Well, I lived up here for about 5 years and didn't say much to many people except another 5th, please, or another 1/4, or half, or whatever. But this, we start becoming a little bit more honest when we see that nobody's going to judge us. This is supposed to be the least judgmental thing there is in the world. I see alcoholics that blame everything on somebody and this and that. Man, if you had to look at my inventory and look, I can't point my finger at nobody. I mean, because of the things I've done, I don't need to have anything bad to say about anybody. Sometimes I do, yeah, but all the things that bothers us, we need to get rid of it. And we may have to do this 3 or 4 times before it happens, too. three or four times. But you see, with the wino, he never opened his mouth and said, "Oh, that's your ego." But Tom was constantly saying, "That's your ego." Then he would tell me I was greedy. And I realized that. And then the lust had caused a lot of my problems. And he said, "I've never seen you angry, but I know you get that way." We're not trying to be perfect here. It was read a while ago. We're not saints. We just strive for progress, not for perfection. Just get a little better each day. Just strive for just a little bit better each day. And on that day, on that next day, when you get through with this fifth step, you might ought to go home and sit down and think about the third step. Because we're fixing to put the third step in position here to where what he had in mind. Because he said, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. All of them. Not just leave lust out. It's got all. And this is the next three steps, the 6, 7, and 8 are the forgotten steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. But step 6 is where the alcoholic will no longer be a child. The childishness, we start growing up in step 6. And it's a daily thing. We don't do it one time. One time and one time only. Why do you think people go out and get drunk? Because they don't pursue it and stay with it. And get away from us. I mean, you know, we're like a bunch of bananas. We get away from the stalk, we get peeled. And this is the stalk right here. We need to be here. I need to be here. But I told you before last week that I knew the price of everything and the value of nothing. This is where the value started coming in. I started finding value in you people. I started finding value in me. I started finding value in the things that I used to just hate. And it was amazing the things that I found that was good that I thought was incredibly bad. And it was just because I was doing some things. But I get up every morning and I ask God with His help that I won't take a drink. And then I start talking to Him about the defects of characters I had today. And we discuss it. And I imagine God would really like to hear me not mention ego anymore. But I'm sure it will come because I have a lot of trouble with it. And it says all of them. That don't mean that we're going to get them all taken away for all times. He's taken away my anger for a long time. That doesn't mean I won't be angry before I get home. Because I'm still just a human. And this is a human life we're living out there. And this hour we have in here is pretty good. We can get along with a lot of things in here. But when we hit that out there, that's when we really got to have all these steps we can have, as much as we can have them, because that's where we live. And that's what this is all about, trying to change and find a better way to live without alcohol and things that will keep you unbalanced for the rest of your life. That's the first thing we do. And we were always looking for happiness. We were talking about that a while ago, the happiness. This is where the happiness starts coming in step 6. It did for me. 5 made me feel pretty happy. I mean, I was glad I got it over with. I didn't know I was going to keep doing it from now on, but that's neither here nor there. But I was happy. But happiness is not getting what you want. Happiness is wanting what you've got. And that is one of the most, as far as I'm concerned, that's an obstacle that I just have lots of problem with. Because sometimes I'm not satisfied with the deal God gave me that day. And when I am, I'm saying I needed more. And last week we talked about my third step being He's management and I'm labor. I guess that's when I'm being manageable and He's starting to be labor. Because sometimes I don't like what I got that day. But the next day it looks pretty good after I look at it and I've turned it over to God. And I don't go scratch up the seed either. Because once you scratch up that seed, it ain't God. It's your seed. You got it back. You put it back down there, and every time you dig it up, it loses a little life. And that's the same thing with turning it over to God. Here is where we start really getting well. And we never get well, but we get better. And we get on down the road. Nobody's ever been cured of alcoholism in here or anywhere else. That we have a daily reprieve. We do this one day at a time, and that one day at a time is the only way we can do it. But step 6 is the open-mindedness that we talked about up here and the widening of the horizons. As I told you last week, when I was 19, 18, out of school, when I was 16, around then, and 17, 18, my horizons were wide, and I had great things I was going to do and be. The more I drank, the more the horizons closed in, And when I got here, they were just about that wide because I could see the I could see my way to the liquor store, and I could see my way to the bootlegger when the liquor stores wasn't open. That was my life. It was just that's all I did. And here they stand. When once we start doing this, they'll start getting wider again, and we'll start seeing things that we know we can do. We know that we can do them because here we start building our character. Reputation is what y'all think of me. Character is what God thinks of me. And and Bill Wilson said right before he died, he said, "I hope and pray that as I get on older, that this Alcoholics Anonymous program has become healthy, and that God thought as much of it as other people did, because our reputation is so strong in here. And I think the more we become spiritual, the stronger our character gets. And that's individually and group-wise. Because the more we tend to that, the more we're going to be able to help other people. And after all, that's all we're here for. But we make a start, and we never stop. And we never, never say never. Don't ever say you're not going to do anything, because that is, then you've locked your mind against everything that's coming up. A good friend of mine, a professional football player, wrote me a letter one time and sent me this picture. I've got it up in my place of business, and he wrote me a long note up there. And he said, "Never, never, never say never, and never give up." And I look at it every day, and it's the very truth. But I can't live this with a closed mind, that I've got to always remember you might be right and I might be wrong. Because when I got here, I didn't think you had, unless you agreed with me, there wasn't much going to happen, you know. But little progress each day. If you eat a piece of candy in one day from here to Houston, you're going to get sick. But if you nibble on it just a little bit each day, you'll finally one day get to Houston and you won't be sick. And that's what this is all about. Try to do it just a little bit each day. Make a little progress each day. And if you don't, we'll talk about it, that in step 10. But if you don't beat yourself up. Because after all, we are only human. And we do make mistakes. And if you had a bad day today, turn it back over to God again and start out with maybe tomorrow will be better. And because nobody has ever, ever been struck blind by looking at the bright side of life, I'll tell you. And the fact is just that just don't happen. And once we get into this looking at ourselves, and we come down here and we look, we know we're going to make mistakes. Don't beat yourself up over it. Pick yourself up and start anew with a new deal. Because you see, if you had good intentions this morning, if you intended to do good today and didn't, put that down as an asset, because probably when you were drinking, you never intended to do good to nobody. I never did, because I wanted it all for me. I wanted it all mine, and you couldn't have any. And my lifestyle back then proved that. Next week, we'll talk about talking to God about that and about the big word in here. And my sponsor, every time I go off and speak at a convention, he'll call me that at my hotel that next day, no matter where it's at. He'll call me. He knows what time I'm going to speak. And he'll say, "Well, how many of you think there?" I'll say, 1,200. He said, "Is that big enough to talk about humility?" I said, "No, it's going to be 1,500. And he'll just... and he, it's a private joke between us. Do you talk about humility? You see, humility is like gratitude. I can show you better than I can tell you. If you're new here and you don't think Alcoholics Anonymous will work, try it. If you don't think God will help you, ask him. Because you see, I thank God that I found Alcoholics Anonymous. Way more than that, I thank Alcoholics Anonymous that I found my God. I love each and every one of you, and thank you so much.